We're in Isaiah chapter 2, and we're reading from verse 1 to 4. Chapter 2. This is what Isaiah, son of Amoz, saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem. In the last days, the mountain of the Lord's temple will be established as the highest of the mountains. It will be exalted above the hills, and all nations will stream to it. Many people will come and say, "Come, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the temple of the God of Jacob. He will teach us his ways, so that we may walk in his paths." The Lord will go out from Zion, the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. He will judge between the nations and will settle disputes for many peoples. They will beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation will not take up sword against nation, nor will they train for war anymore.
Great, there's going to be a picture coming up. Yeah, there it is. Who can tell me who that is? Anyone know who that is? Prince Albert, Queen Victoria's husband, German-born Prince Albert. In 1850, he opened the Great Exhibition at Crystal Palace. And this is what he said. Listen to his words. "Nobody who has paid any attention to the peculiar features of our present era will doubt for a moment that we are living at a period of most wonderful transition, which moves rapidly to accomplish that great end to which indeed all history points, the unity of mankind." He's saying, we're just about there. We're going very quickly, and very soon, all of humanity is going to be united. The Victorian era was a time of great optimism. Great optimism regarding the progress of the human race with the rise of science and technology, medical advance. Paradise is in reaching distance, touching distance. We're nearly there. All the problems of the world are going to be sorted out, and we're going to be living together in harmony and peace. And that united harmony wasn't just a hope of people like Prince Albert and Victorian Great Britain. It was the expectation. It was the expectation. It's going to happen. What did happen 60 years later? He'd have been very disappointed if he'd lived that long. 60 years later, World War I, the war to end all wars, we were told. Well, actually, it was the war to end over 18 million lives. In 1919, after the war, the League of Nations was formed. As the symbol of the League of Nations, 1919, with the Treaty of Versailles, the goal of the League of Nations was this: to keep peace between the nations. What happened 1914 to 1918, the First World War, that must never, ever happen again. 18 million lives lost. That should never happen again. And so, the Treaty of Versailles was signed, the League of Nations was formed, and the goal was to promote international cooperation and to achieve peace and security. To achieve peace and security. Successful? 20 years later, picture, World War II. And approximately, it's very difficult to estimate, but approximately 80 million lives lost between 1939 and 1945. 80 million deaths worldwide. After the Second World War, the United Nations was formed, officially came into being the 24th of October, 1945. Goal number one of the UN Charter, goal number one, is here it is, maintaining worldwide peace and security. Those two words again, peace and security, that's the goal, the number one goal of the United Nations. The logo there with the olive branches surrounding the world, the olive branch is a symbol of peace. We're going to work for peace, that's what we want to achieve. Success or failure? Some measure of success. The UN has helped to prevent some conflicts, but ultimately failure In the years since 1945, listen to this list, the Korean War, the Kenya emergency, the Suez Crisis, the Aden emergency, the Northern Ireland Troubles, the Falklands War, the Gulf War, the Bosnian War, the Kosovan War, the War Against Terror, the Afghanistan War, the Iraq War, and they're just the ones that British troops have been involved with. Just the ones that British troops have been involved in. And they're just the military conflicts as well. Because we've got warfare on our streets, and we've got warfare on our homes. The statistics that are coming out regarding gun crime and knife crime amongst teenagers in our country is staggering and very, very concerning. Things have not improved. 1850, Prince Albert, through to 2017, we need to face the sad fact of human history. We're not very good at getting on with each other, are we? We're not very good at peace. That doesn't stop us longing for it, doesn't stop us dreaming about it, doesn't stop us working towards it, it doesn't stop us singing about it, striking how many songs sing about this dream. And we're going to listen to one now. Again, it's going to be coming up on the video. And yeah, you can watch the video, enjoy it, but listen to the words. Listen to the words. What's Elvis singing? What's he wanting?
There must be lights burning brighter somewhere. Got to be birds flying higher in a sky more blue. If I can dream of a better land where all my brothers walk hand in hand, tell me why. Understanding sometime, strong winds of promise that will blow away all the doubt and fear. If I can dream of a warmer sun where hope keeps shining.
Thank you, Elvis. 1968, that was. Vietnam War was on. And that was a passionate performance. You get the sense that, you know, he's meaning what he's singing. Yeah? And what he is dreaming of, what the words of that song say we're dreaming of, is a better land where all my brothers walk hand in hand. a time when there is peace and understanding between people. And in that song, he sings things that are right, but he sings something that is terribly wrong. I love that song, by the way. But there's something terribly wrong about what he sings, and there's something very right. It's always good when you listen to songs, isn't it? To try and discern those things and to think biblically about them. Well, he's right. We are dreaming of a better land. And we do want and we long for a better world, a place where justice and peace and freedom and security and love reign. He's right as well. The peace that we long for is elusive. You know, why is he singing? Why won't my dream come true? Why won't that sun appear? It's elusive. And he's right, we're lost. We're lost in a cloud with too much rain. We're trapped in a world that's troubled with pain. We're lost, we're trapped. Can't seem to get out, he's right. But what's the problem? Is there an answer? He says, I'm sure an answer's going to come one day somehow. Well, our Bible passage answers these questions. It tells us the problem, and it gives us the answer. So please do turn to that passage, Isaiah chapter 2, that Anna read. And we're going to be looking at bits of Isaiah 1 and Isaiah 2. And we're on page 687 in the church Bibles. These are words of God. They're spoken through Isaiah the prophet, spoken to a nation and a people in crisis, spoken to Judah, the southern kingdom of Israel, and to Jerusalem, the capital city of Judah. Jerusalem, meant to be the city of peace. That's what its name means. Salem means peace. But there's no peace and there's no security. There is great injustice in Judah and Jerusalem. There is great bloodshed and violence. The rich are trampling over the poor. The powerful are trampling over the weak and the vulnerable. And on top of this, and actually because of this, foreign armies are marching against the land, killing, pillaging, looting. The city of Jerusalem is under siege from enemies. And when one enemy was defeated, another one pops up again. Enemy defeated, another one pops up again. It's endless. And the question is why? Why is there no peace? Why the darkness? Well, let's listen carefully to what God says through Isaiah, because the problem he highlights, their problem is our problem. It's the problem of humanity. We saw these last week, but let's look at them again. Verse 2 of chapter 1, right at the start. Hear me. This is God wanting our attention. Hear me, you heavens. Listen, earth, for the Lord has spoken. I reared children and brought them up, but they have rebelled against me. There's the problem. Rebelling against the Lord. Verse 4, woe to the sinful nation, a people whose guilt is great, a brood of evildoers, children given to corruption. They have forsaken the Lord. They have spurned the Holy One of Israel and turned their backs on him. That's the problem. Their problem, our problem. We've turned our backs on our Creator. And the result is pain and misery. But I want to ask another question. Why have we turned our backs? Why have we rebelled? What would cause us to do such a thing? And there's one word is the answer. So we're just going to play a little game of hangman. You know how to play hangman? Okay, you've got a number of chances, but this is for under 11s. 11s and unders only. So adults, no participation, no helping the children. It's okay, so this is just for under 11s. Let's bring it up here so everyone can see it. You need to tell me the word before I draw a gallows and a poor person on those gallows. Here's the word. Right, who wants to give me the first letter? Just want a first letter. No adults, just children. Okay, any letter? No helping, just, you know, you've got to work out a word. Yeah. J. No J. P. There's a P. Someone else? Abby? Someone else? Hang on, Jacob, we'll come back to you if no one else. Come on. Yeah, Daniel. L? Yep. Noel? Anyone else? Yep. A? It's always good to go for vowels, isn't it? Anyone else? Other than people who've had a go? Yeah. Go on then, Leona. R? Any idea? Okay, not helping them. I can hear some helping going on. That's naughty. That's cheating, that. Yeah, anyone else? Yeah, happy? Sorry? V. No V. So we've got three letters, just need to find two more. Oh, you got it, Sean, have you? Yeah, I think you got it. Yeah, well done. Daniel? C? Good try. No C. Is it I? Is there an I in there? Yeah, there's an I. Yeah, go on, I'll give you an I. Okay, ooh, what can it be? You got it? D. What's the word? Pride. Well done for getting it. I always like winning, Hangman, but there you go. But that's the word we want. It's a very important word because that's the big problem, is pride. That's at the heart of sin. And we're going to see that in Isaiah. Pride. We as people are full of ourselves. Let's look at chapter 2. So chapter 2 is open. We're going to be over the page in the second half. We're going to come back to our passage that Anna read in a few moments' time. But look at the top of the other page, verse 5. You've got God's call to his people. God's call to Jacob, Israel. Come, descendants of Jacob, let us walk in the light of the Lord. There's the call. Look at the very last verse in the chapter, verse 22. Here's the command. Stop trusting in mere humans who have but a breath in their nostrils. Why hold them in esteem? Call, let us walk in the light of the Lord. Command, stop trusting in humans. Judah does not walk in the light of the Lord, but trusts in humans. That's the problem. They're trusting in their own ability, and their problem, remember, is our problem. And this is seen very clearly in verses 6 to 9. And we're going to read them together. See what the land is full of. So follow it as I read it. Verse 6. What are they full of? You, Lord, have abandoned your people, the descendants of Jacob. They are full of superstitions from the east. They practice divination like the Philistines and embrace pagan customs. They are full of superstition and divination. Their problem is our problem. Every time we touch wood or check our horoscope, we are trusting ourselves to something other than the one true God. Verse 7, what else is their land full of? Their land is full of silver and gold. There is no end to their treasuries. They are looking to money and to wealth to bring them peace and security. That's what we do too. We look to money and wealth and to our medical insurance and our pension plans to give us security and peace. Don't look ultimately to God. Verse 7, what else is their land full of? Their land is full of horses. There is no end to the chariots. That's military might. We don't have horses and chariots today, but we do have tanks and planes and armies to keep us safe. And very often we can look to those. We can put our trust in our own strength, in other words. And then verse 8, their land is full of idols. They bow down to the work of their hands, to what their fingers have made. Idols. He's already mentioned a few idols. Superstitions, money, military might. And he's meaning also anything else that we put in the place of God, anything else that we look to, trust in, worship, love, and live for more than God. In other words, they are full of themselves. We are full of ourselves. They're full of things that their own hands have made. They're full of their own ability, their own achievements. They are full of, what's the word? Pride. They're full of pride, and that's the issue. And we see very clearly that that's the issue. So do have a look at number 9, the sentence number 9, verse 9. Here's the issue. So people will be brought low and everyone humbled because they're proud. Verse 11. The eyes of the arrogant will be humbled and human pride brought low. The Lord alone will be exalted in that day. Verse 12. The Lord Almighty has a day in store for all the proud and lofty, for all that is exalted, and they will be humbled. Verse 17. The arrogance of man will be brought low, and human pride humbled. The Lord alone will be exalted in that day. Do you see? See the problem? Can't miss it, can you? Pride. Rebelling against God, ignoring His word, trusting in other things is a result of pride. And pride is a complete anti-God state of mind. And pride is the chief cause of misery in every nation and in every family since the world began. Let me say that again. Pride is the chief cause of misery in every country and in every family since the world began. Because pride seeks to exalt me above God. And it seeks to bring God down to below me. It seeks to exalt me to above God. And seeks to bring God down to below me. That's pride. And pride always produces conflict. It always drives people apart. Of course it does. Because when I turn my back on God and I set myself up as God, and you do that as well, you turn your back on God and you set yourself up as God, then what we got? We've got a clash. We've got war. No room for two gods in one room. And there are 7 billion wannabe gods on the earth. Can we really expect peace? Well, God hates pride, and He's going to judge it. He tells us that in this chapter, that pride will be judged one day. Humanity will be humbled on that day. And actually, we'll see that everything that we've relied on and trusted in other than God is absolutely rubbish. Verse 18, the idols will totally disappear. You see that? Everything we've trusted in other than God is going to disappear. And verse 20, in that day, people will throw away to the moles and the bats their idols of silver, their idols of gold, which they made to worship. They're useless, worthless. Message, do not trust in man. That's not the solution, is it? Don't trust in humanity. Don't pin your hopes on yourself. Don't pin your hopes on the rest of humanity. Don't pin your hopes on politics, on sport. Don't pin your hopes on economic revival. Don't pin your hopes on technological and scientific advance. Don't pin your hopes on better education to bring people together and unite the world. Don't pin your hopes on any of those things, because that's not where the hope lies. It doesn't lie with people. And that's where Elvis was wrong. Did you notice where he was wrong? There's a line in the song where he says this: as long as a man has strength to dream, he can redeem his soul and fly. There's the answer. The answer lies with man. Isaiah 2 says, no. Don't trust humanity. Hope does not lie there. The answer does not lie there. That's where the problem lies in the very first place. Where does hope lie? Well, hope lies with God. Hope lies with the Holy One of Israel, the God of the Bible, and His promise. Let's look, finally, at those verses that Anna read to us over the page. And here is the answer to Elvis's trembling question. Here is the strong wind of promise to blow away all the doubt and the fear. Here is the beckoning candle in the darkness. Look at verse 4. It says about God, He will judge between the nations and will settle disputes for many peoples. They will beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation will not take up sword against nation, nor will they train for war anymore. The problem is human pride. Here's the answer, God's promise. It's a wonderful promise. It's a great picture, isn't it? Here's the land that Elvis is dreaming of. This is what Prince Albert thought was so close. A better land where all my brothers walk hand in hand, a place of peace, a place of understanding. And the words of Isaiah 4 are written on a wall. Has anyone been to visit that wall? Do you know where the wall is? The wall is called the Isaiah Wall, and it's in New York City, just across the road from the United Nations. And if you visit the UN, you can visit that wall with these wonderful words of promise. They will beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. It's going to be a great day, isn't it? Weapons of war no longer needed. They will become farming implements. What was used to destroy, what was used to kill, will be used to grow and sustain life instead. So tanks, they're going to be turned into tractors. That's what this is saying, isn't it? Just to modernize it, to contemporize it for our culture. Bombs will become, oh, there we go. Bombs will become, thank you, Dave, balers. Those weapons of mass destruction are going to be changed into something that is productive and fruitful. Then you've got machine guns, great taker of life. Well, they're going to become fruit pickers. It is a wonderful picture, isn't it? Nation not taking up sword against nation anymore. No one training for war anymore. No military academies anymore. No Sandhurst, no Catterick. No military parades like that in North Korea. You won't see that anymore. No preparation for war. No terrorist training camps either. All shut down. All gone forever. Peace on earth. That's what we're longing for. That's what we're looking for. God says it will happen. When? Here's the problem with the fact that verse 4 is the only verse written on the wall. Verse 4 doesn't tell us how it's going to happen, does it? Just tells us that it will happen. Verse 4 doesn't tell us how it's going to happen. Verse 4 will only happen when verses 2 and 3 happen. What does verse 2 and 3 say? In the last days, the mountain of the Lord's temple will be established as the highest of the mountains. It will be exalted above the hills, and all nations will stream to it. Many peoples will come and say, "Come, let's go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the temple of the God of Jacob. He will teach us his ways, so that we may walk in his paths. The law will go out from Zion, the word of the Lord from Jerusalem." We will only do verse 4. We will only rightly relate to one another when we are rightly relating to God. Peace will only come when we stop fighting against God and when we start listening to him and accepting what he says. Verse 4 only happens when we stop turning our backs on God and we turn back to him. When we stop trusting our own way and we accept his way. When we come to the place of his presence, God's mountain, his temple. Where's that? It's the wrong question. It's not a question of where, but who? Who's that? Because the New Testament tells us that God's temple is a person. It's Jesus. He is the place where we meet God. He is the place where we receive God's forgiveness. He is the place where we get peace with God. Jesus is the only peace. So between this broken, messed up world of pain and God's new, perfect world of joy, which is coming, but between that world is a huge barrier of human sin, human pride, and God's anger against that sin and that pride. And the big question is, in these chapters, how do we go from that rebellious world, this messed up world, this sad world, this miserable world, how do we get to God's eternal world of peace? How can God take a sinful, rebellious, proud people into his glorious New Jerusalem? How? And Isaiah doesn't give us the full answer until chapter 40 onwards. But I can't wait. So we're just going to fast forward. You don't have to turn to it. But the answer was nailed to a cross in Jerusalem, the old Jerusalem. Some words from Isaiah 53. He, Jesus, was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. The punishment that brought us peace was on him. And by his wounds, we are healed. It's through the work of the servant who humbled himself and who suffered in the place of those who exalted themselves. It's through Jesus, the one who suffered, humbled, and then exalted to the highest place. He's the hope of the nations. He is the only hope. So stop trusting human beings. Stop trusting your own superstitions. Touching wood will not bring us peace and security. But Jesus will. Jesus will, because he touched wood for us. He was nailed to that wooden cross. Stop trusting money. Stop trusting wealth. That cannot redeem us from our slavery, our terrible slavery to sin. The price to redeem ourselves is too high. But Jesus can redeem us because he paid the price. And he paid it in full on the cross. Stop trusting our own strength. Our own strength, our own armies will not overcome our enemies, because our enemies are not out there. Our enemy is in here. It is my sin, my pride, your sin, your pride. But Jesus can deal with that, because on the cross, he took the punishment for our sin, our pride. He took our sin and he killed it on the cross. He finished it. He fought the war to end all wars. It was fought on the cross in Jerusalem, and he won. And now we can be forgiven by God. We can have peace with God. And because we can have peace with God now, we can have peace with one another. If we stop trusting and exalting ourselves, and we start trusting him and exalting him. God's promise in these verses 2-4 is coming true right now. It is coming true right now. We see and enjoy a measure of this peace today. Jesus has been exalted to the highest place. The message has been going out from Jerusalem since the day of Pentecost. The gospel of peace is going out. It's going out today. People from the nations are coming to Christ, and they're enjoying peace with God, and they're enjoying peace with each other. There is peace. There is peace between people who used to be enemies, Jews and Gentiles, English and Scottish, British and Americans, British and Germans. There is peace today. Our gathering here, right now, this morning, is Isaiah 2 coming true. It is now, and yet it's not yet. It's not fully realized. We still fall out. War is a grim reality in our world. The full fulfillment of God's plan lies in the future, when Jesus comes back to judge the living and the dead, when he will shake the earth and all his enemies will be cast out, and all those who've humbled themselves and trusted him will be brought in, and the whole earth will be full of Jesus' saved and perfectly transformed people, unable to sin anymore. And the peace will be full, the peace will be final, the peace will be forever. What a day. An impossible dream? Is that an impossible dream? No, it's not impossible. It's not impossible because it's not a dream. It's a promise. It's a promise. No maybe or might be in these words. It will happen. And God always keeps his promises. He will come to shake the earth. The message of Isaiah 2 is this. Know that. He's coming. So do not let your foolish pride stop you enjoying that eternal place, that eternal peace. Don't let your foolish pride stop you coming to Jesus right now. Humble yourself, come to Christ, and stand on the solid rock of God's promise and not on the quicksand of human pride. Stand on the solid rock of God's promise and not on the quicksand of human pride. No future. The future's here.